we've got the second half of a talk given by Joel Goldsmith about his inspirational work that's become known as The Infinite Way. I'm Robin with Tributaries.
A few weeks ago when we were in England and the weather kept up remarkably well as really summer weather, but the calendar said that fall was due and winter, and so the questions came up in the paper about colds and grip, flu, and the reporter went to a very prominent doctor in London, evidently a specialist in this field, and said, now that this season is coming upon us, is there any way known that we can avoid these colds and grip? The reporter says, I have heard that there are certain inoculations we can get, shots, which will either eliminate the colds or reduce them. And the doctor said, yes, that's true. There are shots that we can give you, and we have found by actual test that they reduce the amount of colds or grip or flu by one third. So that if normally you have three colds in a winter, the chances are with these inoculations you'll only have two. Oh, the reporter said, well now, that's important even to cut it down by one third. What can I tell the people about this, or where can they go? Well, he said, don't be so fast, because we have also found that if we give these inoculations of plain water, they also reduce these colds by one third. Then evidently, weather, climate, germs, evidently these are really not laws. They operate as laws in the minds of the ignorant, just as taking a hypodermic of water operates to reduce the colds and very often to reduce pain. Many a person has been in terrible pain and received injections of water and immediately been relieved of the pain. The metaphysical practice in the last 80 or 90 years is proof positive that there are no physical laws of disease, because every metaphysical healing is a proof that the disease healed did not have a law to sustain it. If it did, it would have been an immortal disease, an eternal disease. Anything that has a law is eternal and immortal. 2 times 2 is 4, and no one can violate that law. That's really an eternal one. And all of these laws that we know about that cannot be broken, they are laws. But once a law can be broken, it's not a law, and never was a law. If disease had a law, then disease would be immortal, and there'd be nothing you could do about it. And the only reason that it's curable, more especially by metaphysical means, is that it has no law. Now then, this was very early recognized in the metaphysical world, and still is, but as I said the other night, say again tonight, the mistake was in believing that whereas there were no laws of matter, that there were laws of mind. Now we know better. We in our work have been proving, as long as I'm in the work, that these laws of mind are no more laws than the laws of matter. And you can only begin to understand your freedom and to demonstrate it when you break through, first of all, the belief that there are material laws to bind you, whether of disease or economy. Secondly, when you begin to realize that there are no laws of mind. Eventually, you will come to the place where you will recognize God. When you do, you will know that God is infinite. And this cannot be said as a cliche or, oh, well, I know that. No, no, no. I'm not speaking about the fact that everybody knows that God is infinite. I'm talking about coming face to face with God and finding that it's literally true that God is infinite. And that means then that there are no other powers operating. God must be the only lawgiver. And since God is spirit, the only laws are spiritual laws. Once you come to that realization, you watch how the material laws and the mental laws begin to fade. All laws of limitation begin to dissolve through your recognition of God as infinite spirit, God as infinite law or infinite lawgiver, and therefore all law as spiritual. Now, spiritual law is a law of harmony because it is a law of eternality. There could be no such thing as eternality if there were discord or inharmony somewhere along the line. You will find from the very first book, The Infinite Way, and through every one of the Infinite Way books and booklets, you will find this principle presented, and the mode of application to human affairs at every level. Again, remember, I'm presenting to you a personal experience. And my personal experience began with healing the sick with this principle. Then, because I had been in the business world, I attracted to me people from the business world with business problems, and eventually began to prove these principles in the business world. And then, as my work continued and I opened my consciousness to wider activities, I was brought into the work of capital and labor relations. And they operate there beautifully, and not 99%, just an even 100%. Without deviation. It makes no difference in what way we have turned with these principles. And now I say to you tonight that we have worked on destructive forces of weather, and again proved without deviation, but with 100% of absolute demonstration, that this principle operates in the experience of tornadoes and cyclones and tidal waves, operates to dissolve them before they have done any damage. In other words, our work has taken us in, out of, or beyond merely the healing of individual cases of disease. As a matter of fact, we, the students of the Infinite Way, have gone through two experiences of this Asiatic flu, in the first of which not one of our practitioners had a call for help from an Infinite Way student. Not one had to ask for help in any part of the world where the Asiatic flu hit. And the second experience was nearly like that. There were a few isolated experiences of calls for help, but otherwise it was able to carry this out into the broader experience to prove that this is not merely a principle that operates for you or me. This is a universal principle that operates for saint or sinner, white or black, Jew or Gentile, bond or free. Strangely enough, after my talk the other evening, in which I said that you only begin to demonstrate your freedom as you accept the fact that there are no more mental laws than there are material laws. And lo and behold, this morning I was presented with a book. This book is written by Sir Victor Goddard, who was Air Marshal of England. And this is what he wrote, or rather, this is from the dust cover of what is in this book. The author questions the wide range of popular ideas and values, firmly rejecting the major fallacy that the world can progress in any real sense by physical and mental power alone. He looks to a future when the full awareness of the Trinity of matter, mind, and spirit could transform the world of economic struggle into harmony, not of coexistence and non-aggression, but of true peace. You see, this vision is spreading that we are not going to be saved by physical powers, even up unto atomic power, nor are we going to be saved by mental powers. Mental powers can be used for both good and evil, and this rules them out as a savior. We have to go beyond material and mental power, but we must not make the mistake of seeking spiritual power, for there is none. We have to go beyond the realm of power. Now, you who have been active in healing work must have had the experience that your best healings took place not when you were exerting a power, but when you were totally unaware of any power, but were probably relaxed and resting in an atmosphere of peace, of God. I am sure that there isn't anyone who has ever been very active in the healing work, metaphysical healing work, who hasn't discovered that their finest healings took place when they were least aware of power, of treatment, of mental work. Sometimes even when they were totally unaware of any mental argument taking place within them. The word power is enough to destroy you individually and the world collectively. Because regardless of what power you may discover, be assured someone else may discover a greater one. No longer seek for power. Seek for an atmosphere of the absence of power. In other words, if you awaken to the realization, let us say, for instance, you have a cold or grip or flu, or you are someone who has been called upon to help someone with cold or grip or flu, and you know that behind it is this claim of weather or this claim of germs, infection or contagion, and you sit and give your metaphysical treatment, whatever form it may assume, and then learn in an hour or the next day that your patient is free of the fever, of the congestion, of the cough. Haven't you proven that that cold had no power, that those germs had no power, that the weather had no power in the light of whatever it was that you knew? In other words, they only operated as power in the absence of truth. Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And in the absence of truth, any kind of a theory is power. But in the presence of truth, nothing can stand that defileth or maketh a lie, for there is no power. Thou, the master says to Pilate, thou could have no power over me, unless it came from God. That's a terrible thing to say to the ruler of your country, the governor, the greatest, the highest temporal authority. Thou couldst have no power over me. We wouldn't even like to tell that to a traffic cop. But it's true. It's true. Temporal power is power in the absence of truth, but not in the presence of truth. How many thousands of people have gone into court cases, legal cases, and proven beyond all doubt that no amount of conspiracies, no amount of pull, influence, or anything else could prevail against the truth known. So you are going to find that when the master said, resist not evil, he wasn't passing out cliches. He was revealing principles. When he revealed the entire principle of no power in the man who was crippled, what did hinder you? Pick up your bed and walk. What did hinder you? To a crippled man, what did hinder you? Well, the man should have answered, my paralysis. But the master saw that paralysis and still said, what did hinder you? Eventually, you are going to come to see, every one of you who are embarked on the path of truth, regardless of what your approach may be today, eventually you are going to see that you are going to be free. Free of economic lack and limitation. Free of physical limitation. Completely free of moral deterioration. And very, very free of inharmonious and discordant human relationships. You are going to be free of these as you learn not to use a power against anyone or over anyone. When you begin to realize that God is not a power over anyone, if God were, he'd be doing plenty to us. God is not a power over anyone or over any condition. The only power that is connected with God is this. God is the creative, maintaining, and sustaining principle or power of life. But God is always doing that. And he's not using that power over anything. Oh, no, no. Once you think of power as something over something or against something or over someone, you are on the wheel of life. You are trapped in the universal hypnotism of a belief in power. You are only free when you realize that there are no evil powers, physical, mental, moral, financial. There are no evil powers, and there are no good powers. There just are no powers. Spirit is self-creative, self-maintaining, self-sustaining, but it never starts. Can you imagine God starting to use his power to bring up the sunshine tomorrow? No. Can you imagine God using his power for some reason to stop the sun coming up tomorrow? Can you imagine God using a power for any purpose, for anybody or any race or any nation or any religion? No. No. You cannot influence God. Ah, there comes the mystery. We are all seeking through prayer or treatment to catch hold of God's power, and we cannot do it. It's hopeless. You're licked before you start. It's an egotistical belief that you can influence God to do something for you or for your patients or for your students or for your relatives. You who have been in the work long enough ought to know by now that you can't influence God. Now, God is infinite. And if there's any influencing, it's God that can influence us. If so be we open ourselves, as the Master taught, fill ourselves with the word of truth. Let the word of truth abide in us, and let us abide in that word, and then let God's presence, God's grace, govern us, influence us, move us. But let us not try to move God or influence God or function or direct God. Will you send a thought to me? No, I won't, and God won't. The kingdom of God is within you, and all of God's thought, all of God's wisdom is already within you. Browning knew it. Truth is within ourselves, and there's no use of going outside to look for it. You have to open out a way within yourself to let it escape. In other words, if you want truth, you have to learn to go within. Speak, Lord, thy servant heareth. Only when you do this, don't look for a truth to use against some error. You'll defeat your purpose. Don't look for a truth with which to overcome some discord. You'll miss the way. God isn't to be used. One of the writings that I'm happiest about is the chapter in the new book, Is God a Servant? Is God a servant? You know better. We are servants of God if we understand God. The Master was a servant of God. He never claimed to be a master. Master was only a title like priest or rabbi or minister. Master is a title. We have them in Masonic lodges. It merely is a designation of a position we occupy. The Master never claimed to be a master. He knew himself to be the servant of the Most High. This doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. This power is not mine. I can of my own self do nothing. The Father within me doeth the works. And when we stop trying to use power, influence upon God, we will find that whatever power or influence God is always operating in us, but not over something. There is the trap. In the word power, do not believe that the power of truth overcomes error. Don't believe that God cures disease. Don't believe that God sends you supply. Don't ever believe that God can send you supply, or else you might have to accept the belief that God can withhold your supply. And then what a dilemma you'd be in, and what a God you'd have. For me, it's shocking enough to believe that God could send supply when I think of all the people who haven't got it. And then to think that something called God could send it and isn't, isn't that horrible? But the truth is that God can't. God can't send supply. God can't give supply. God can't withhold supply. You might as well try to imagine God sending sunshine or withholding it. You might as well try to imagine God sending rain or withholding it. Heaven knows we've just come through a summer in Europe of 4 months without rain. And there were enough prayers sent up to heaven to bring down the flood of Noah's Ark. But it didn't move God, evidently. Not a drop would flow for 4 months. Maybe they weren't all good people praying. I wouldn't know. This I know. God is, and God is closer to you than breathing and nearer than hands and feet. and God's grace is your sufficiency. Never do you need anything but God's grace, and that you have. You never need supply from God or health from God. You never need safety or security from God, and you can't get them. That is what has been holding this world in bondage, looking to God for safety and security, for peace, for happiness, for prosperity. It won't come. If you wish to enjoy God's grace, give up all of your desires and hopes and tricks. Well, they're nothing but fancy tricks, trying to get a little health out of God, or a little supply, or a lot. They're just fancy tricks. Black magic. No, let's call them white magic. White magic or black magic, what difference does it make? A little hocus pocus. Here's a person who's spiritual, and we'll go to him, and he'll get God to do something for us that God won't do without this spiritual light over here. Or we'll go to Lourdes, or we'll go to Jerusalem. And there God will do something that God won't do at 42nd Street and Broadway. Why? I don't know. 42nd Street and Broadway is one of the finest streets in the world. And I know that God is just as much on that corner as any corner I have visited in this world. The mistake has been, first, on the part of the pagans, who, when they didn't have enough rain or enough crops or enough fish or enough something or other, started to look for a superhuman power to give it to them. And they began to pray to an unknown superhuman power. They evidently didn't get it, so they prayed to two. They didn't get enough then, so they prayed to three. Eventually, they had a god for almost every subject in the world. But you know that that couldn't have been a very successful system, because Abraham, father of the Hebrews, wiped it all out and said, let's have one god, but a great, big, powerful one. Almighty, all-powerful one. And they prayed to that one god for the same things they had been praying to the 12 for. And the next few hundred years of the Hebrews wasn't a very happy one either. Nor the next few thousand years. With all of their one God to pray to for the same things for which they'd been praying to a dozen gods before. The mistake then is that the God of the pagans and the God of the Old Testament was carried over into Christianity, even though the Master tried his best to bring into this world a new dispensation with a God to whom you need not pray for what you eat or drink or wherewithal you shall be clothed. For your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of these things, and it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. What has become of that God? What has become of it that our churches are filled praying for crops or whatnot? Rain. All right.
Joel Goldsmith, for anything tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. In the words of Dr. Hugh Len, wishing you peace beyond all understanding. I'm Robin Clare.